From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, angels and ghosts. Hey, tis the season, right? Here's a little program note for you, especially for you new listeners. Live program for you on Christmas Eve night. And on Christmas night, we will be live. Here's what's happening. Technology stocks let a slide on Wall Street again, with the S&P 500 languishing at a 15-month low and the NASDAQ flirting with bear market territory. That's not good after the Federal Reserve quashed hopes of a toned-down approach to its interest rate hike path. People a little tense about that. A magnitude 7.4 earthquake struck the east coast of Russia, sparking warnings of a tsunami. The United States Geological Survey, monitoring the quake, said it was about 5 miles deep and struck right before 5 a.m. local time in Russia. North Korea says it will never give up its nukes unless the United States removes a threat. North Korea, of course, says it's just never unilaterally going to give them up. Is it a ruse? Let's check in with our expert, Charles R. Smith. Charles, what's going on? We haven't heard from Kim Jong-un in a while, and now we hear this.
Oh, it's just the usual tit-for-tat ploy. Do keep in mind that the North also answers to Beijing, and Beijing is not too happy with the American stance as of recent. So they prod him. He makes some noise. Distracts everyone. The likelihood, though, of course, of the United States withdrawing its nuclear umbrella not only over South Korea but Japan, which is part of the demands that were made, is zero or nil. So just expect to see some more banter going back and forth as our American envoy is taking a tour of the North Korean and the South Korean area this week.
So does this mean we're back to square one with North Korea?
Not entirely. The South is currently doing a lot with the North. You know, we're going to see a whole reformatting of the village at Panmunjom, and you're going to also see some news about that in the upcoming weeks, about travel and transit. The potential for removing some of the sanctions against the North if they kind of cooperate. At the same time, though, once again, we're going to have to keep in mind that North Korea answers primarily to Beijing, and the current trade as well as just general relationship between the Washington and Beijing is not that good at the moment.
All right, Charles, have yourself a great Christmas, my friend, and thank you for everything you've done for us in this year and the years coming. Drones spotted over the runway forced the shutdown of London's airport during one of the busiest times of the year, stranding or delaying tens of thousands of Christmas season travelers and setting off a hunt for the operator of the intruding aircraft. The prospect of a deadly collision between what police called industrial-grade drones and an airliner led authorities to stop all flights in and out of the airport. Earth is approaching the debris zone of a comet, source of the Ursid meteor shower, so look out when you glance at the skies. Peter Davenport glances at the skies quite often. He heads up the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, what do you have for us this week, my friend?
Well, the Western world may be planning to take a break for the holidays, George, but the UFOs certainly have not done that.
No.
I'm sitting here with my cousin Doug in Albany, Oregon. I've been doing a little traveling myself, and I'd like to start out with a birthday shout-out to a couple regular Coast listeners, George. Mike and Sean Riley in Albany, Oregon. Sean, the son, is coming up on his 17th birthday, and they're tuned in almost every night. Well, the first report I'd like to start with is from Hickory, North Carolina, the 17th Monday of this week. Gentleman writes that he was standing outside looking at the night sky, as that's the way most UFO reports start, of course, and he saw an orange object, orange light spinning and pulsing, descending vertically. As it got to its perigee, its lowest point, it stopped and paused for a moment and then started moving laterally, parallel to the horizon, and just disappeared in the night sky, ran to get his wife, but by the time they got back, the object was gone. Second report comes from also from North Carolina. This one from Oak Island. The next night, the 18th, I think that's two nights ago, on Tuesday of this week, husband and wife were standing outside, and their attention was drawn to a cluster of white lights. They estimated at least 10 or a dozen, moving in a very complex fashion, sometimes as a group, sometimes individually. And it's a very complex sighting. I won't take time tonight to try to describe it, George, but it's well worth reading. We should have it posted soon.
Super.
Shortly after the sighting of the white lights, about the size of SARS, the husband and wife saw several orange lights that split into six separate orange objects. Looking forward to having that posted. Very interesting report. Third report comes from St. Augustine, Florida. A woman reports seeing a very, very bright white flash of light followed by a green light below it. And I mention this case because within 2 minutes, a very similar report from Holden, North Carolina, takes us back to that state for a moment. Person saw a green object streak at least covering 30 degrees of the horizon. And he quite properly allows for the possibility that it may have been a meteor, but he says it was way too large to be a meteor, and he saw it for 15 seconds, which is a long, long time for even for a dramatic meteor. Last couple of reports I'd like to touch on. One comes from Graniteville, Vermont. Two witnesses saw two red lights that were hovering below cloud level. They suddenly accelerated to the right and disappeared very, very rapidly. I'll skip the last one, George, and save it until next week. But I'd like to, in closing, just wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to you, your staff, and, of course, to the Coast listeners. And we'll see you sometime next week.
Absolutely. Thank you, Peter. You have a great Christmas yourself, and we'll talk with you right after Christmas. And enjoy the holiday, my friend. A new discovery in Egypt. Stand by. Dr. Carmen Bolter back with us. We're going to talk about something that just may knock you off your chair next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you and Dr. Carmen Bolter back with us. Dr. Bolter is the director, producer, and writer of the incredible The Pyramid Code, which is a 5-episode documentary series. She's a retired professor from the Graduate Division of Educational Research at the University of Calgary. As she has taught in Taiwan for a number of years, was the director of the Women's Therapy and Research Center in Calgary for 10 years. Carmen has traveled to well over 60 different countries to conduct her research, including Egypt. Dr. Bolter is also on the International Advisory Board for the Bosnian Pyramid Project as well. Her website, pyramidcode.com, linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Happy holidays and a Merry Christmas to you, Carmen.
Merry Christmas, George, and happy solstice.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Santa was good in Egypt these days. I hear there's all kinds of discoveries coming out of there.
Well, there are. There definitely are. But the one that everybody's looking for doesn't happen to be in Egypt, but it is a breaking news story.
This is another tomb that they may have found?
Yep. And it's about Egypt, but it doesn't happen to be in Egypt.
Where exactly might it be?
Jordan.
That's unusual, isn't it?
It totally is, but I think that everyone's expecting to find this tomb, and there's been as many as 187 claims that they think they found it. And if you ask anybody in Egypt about it, they'll tell you, oh yeah, we've got it. Where is it? I don't know. And so it's been well hidden, let's put it that way.
Why are people kind of skating on the issue?
Well, that's a big question. I mean, you know about the stories I've told you about the turkey find, Hawara, and I think that governments step in and they feel threatened by the whole idea. When you look at what happened with King Tut, I mean, before they started taking the pictures, some artifacts were lifted, and did you know they found some of them in the house that Downton Abbey was filmed in?
Oh, geez.
You know, they had those secret compartments with cubbyhole doors.
Yep.
And there's original artifacts, but once they've been stolen, people are afraid to admit they've got them. And so I think they helped themselves a little bit in King Tut's tomb before they announced the discovery.
Now, this particular discovery, how did archaeologists come across this one?
Well, just like Howard Carter worked for 31 years in Egypt before his discovery, this particular researcher looked for over 20 years. And what he was looking for was the Ark of the Covenant.
Hmm.
And then he started wondering about who might have had the Ark of the Covenant after everything that they had, found. And that's how the story, and he was a military man, and he had access to ground penetrating radar, and now in the most recent years, the high-definition satellite scans, which is how we made the discovery for Hawara, not physically, but in terms of the scans. And so over the years now, because this has only been functioning now for a few years, there's been more verification of things that they've seen on the scans that governments have actually gone and dug for. And now that the accuracy of this particular scan is coming clear, and that's how they found it.
Tell us more about the tomb and its significance, Carmen.
Well, it's huge. There's three levels. One level has 12 rooms. One level has 33 rooms.
Jeez.
Yeah, and it's estimated that there are between 30 and 45,000 tons of gold.
Tons?
Yep.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
No wonder they're keeping it quiet.
Well, it's contentious, because there's so much corruption and there's so much value, so the country's trying to protect it. King Abdullah and consort queen Rania, and definitely the excavations in the works. It's been entered twice only, and the discoverer went back twice to camouflage the entrance, and there's been all kinds of controversy that went when the first announcement was made. King Abdullah commissioned 14 National Guards to guard the road down below it. And when the announcement was first made, another group came along and said, oh, no, that's not his, that's ours. And they kind of made a situation where they were waiting at the tomb, and the police arrested these people.
Jeez.
But when Reuters did the press conference about the announcement, there was controversy about who the real discoverer was, and so they didn't allow the story to go as far and wide as it should. So Reuters came back a few years later, which is recent, and did another full hour video and story, and established that the discoverer that I'm familiar with, that I met and had big meetings with in Paris, is the authentic one, and still the thing's a little bit on hold.
Who would own the gold, for example, if they decide to start pulling it out? Does it belong to the Jordanian government, or does the founder of the tomb, do they get a cut of it?
I think it's 100% the government of Jordan, and I think it belongs, the knowledge of it belongs to all of us, to the whole world. And no, I don't think that it has anything to do with the discoverer, though the king is aware that he has one artifact in particular that he carries in a locked suitcase. And at these meetings in Paris, down the road from the Arc de Triomphe in this beautiful building, I was invited to go and meet the principals. And he handed out rubber gloves, and I ended up holding this artifact in my hands, and it was life-changing. Let me tell you.
You could feel something, can't you? There's an energy behind some of these.
Absolutely. And the story that goes with it, I mean, it's just mind-boggling.
How did they discover it? I mean, was this, in a mountainside that they had to excavate for it? Was it deep underground? How did they find it?
Well, what it is an abandoned salt mine. And in order to get the main artifacts to it, the discoverer started to look for roads that would be 5 meters wide, because they wouldn't have been able to bring these artifacts to the place if the road wasn't wide enough. So he did a lot of work with ground penetrating radar and looked in a lot of different places, as we said, in earnest for 20 years. 20, that's a long time.
That is a long time.
And so then he started finding where there were wider roads, and that, in short, a short time led him to this abandoned salt mine, as I said, on three levels, which is really, really enormous.
Now, tombs are normally built for kings, queens. Who was this one built for?
Well, I'll tell you, but there are 18 burials that span like a hub around the, it's almost like a wagon wheel, and each chamber has a gold statue of the person. 17 of them are gold sarcophagi, and one of them is stone, and each of the grave goods is with the person. And there's 18 burials on one level.
18? So these would have been 18 people of royalty? And I guess we can't say they were Egyptians buried in Jordan. Who might they have been?
Well, should I tell you now, or do you want to keep leading up to it?
Tell me now. I can't wait.
They think the stone one is Cleopatra.
Oh, boy.
And this is the tomb of Alexander the Great.
This is amazing.
And 16 of the other ones would be the Ptolemies, and one Ptolemy was Alexander's half-brother. So when it's time to do DNA testing, I think it'll be quite interesting, because we don't expect that the Ptolemies would be related, blood-related, to Alexander. So that's quite interesting in itself. So what we know about Alexander is that when he passed, his territories were divided up to his army generals, so they weren't his relatives. But they're pretty sure the stone sarcophagus is Cleopatra's. And there's other things in there, too. But, I mean, this is astounding.
Is her mummified body in the sarcophagus?
Well, none of this has been opened yet. They've been into the discoverer has been in twice and just looked around in total astonishment. And there's other things that I can tell you about that's in there. And that they did not even begin. But the artifact that I held was the dagger, Alexander's dagger, that was laying over his heart.
This is an incredible discovery. I mean,
I saved it for you, George. I've been sitting on this.
I know this. Lisa was telling me about this. What do they need to do, Carmen, to authenticate whether it's Cleopatra or not?
Well, that would be some kind of DNA testing. But the tomb itself has been accredited as a UNESCO find. The photographs, which I've seen, and video, have been authenticated in Paris by one of the most world-renowned authenticators of photographs. And there is a plan of how to go in and when, what to do, and the politics of it have been, well, rolling out, but it haven't happened yet.
Is this the first time publicly that anybody on a national broadcast has said that they may have discovered the tomb of Cleopatra?
Well, just like Nefertiti, they find her, and then they find her again, and then they say they've got her, but then they don't. So, yes, I would say, but certainly there's 187 tombs that have been claimed to be Alexander the Great, including one in northern Greece, Macedonia, which is probably his father.
I haven't heard many of them, though, referred to Cleopatra. Not a lot.
Fair enough. And that may be jumping to conclusions too fast, but if it's a stone sarcophagus, that stands to reason to be more like an Egyptian tomb burial. But, like, after thinking about this for months, and comparing it to the find, the turkey find, there's a lot of reasons why they would have hidden it somewhere no one would ever look.
That's a good point, especially if they had that amount of gold at each one of those burial sites.
Well, and you should see these pictures. Now, the thing that he was looking for was the Ark of the Covenant.
And let's talk about that too, Carmen. We're going to take a quick break. We will be back with Dr. Carmen Bolter. What an amazing discovery if they actually have found the tombs of Alexander the Great and Cleopatra. And we'll take your calls with her next hour on Coast to Coast AM. We will be back in a moment with Dr. Carmen Bolter as we talk about this incredible discovery in Jordan. We'll take calls with her next hour here on Coast to Coast AM. We've got a couple live shows coming up for you. The one in May, May 11th, is in Columbus, Ohio. Tom Danheiser is the executive producer of the event. You ready for this one?
This one's going to be fun. This is we're going to invade the Lincoln Theater on Saturday, May 11th, right before Mother's Day. And we're going to do a special tribute to some mothers during that show. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have, as guests, Ghost Whisperer Marianne Winkowski. I love Marianne. She's great. Rosemary Ellen Guiley will be there. And topping it off, the father of ufology, Stanton Friedman.
And my mother may be there.
Your mother
Mother's
may be
Day.
There. Well, like I said, we'll do a special Mother's Day tribute. We'll have a live band. You can sing a few songs. The audience can participate. We always set mics up so the audience can walk up and talk to the guests and ask questions if they want. And the way you can get tickets is you can do a couple things. You can go to coasttocoastam.com in the events section. Just click on the banner and they'll get you right there.
Top, right at the top of the homepage.
Very top. Or you can call 614-469-0939.
Super.
And that's how you get them.
You got it. And also it's in the carousel reel. And then the other show, of course, is coming up in just a couple months. That's in Everett, Washington, March 23rd. Now, this is a big theater. And already more than half of the tickets are already gone, but they've still got some great seats there and the nice balcony seats, too. You can look and see everything. Same thing. Go to events at coasttocoastam.com or click the highlight reel. It's at the Everett Theater in Everett, Washington, the historic Everett Theater. And there's also a number to call for tickets. Leave a message if a human doesn't pick up the phone. That's 425-258-6766. 425-258-6766. So Columbus, the event is May 11th. Everett, Washington, coming up March 23rd. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. Carmen Bolter with us. I should say she has a book, also Angels and Archetypes and Evolutionary Map of Feminine Consciousness, and her DVD, The Pyramid Code, as well. That is a 5-episode series. And we're talking about this discovery in Jordan of this incredible series of tombs that could include Cleopatra, Alexander the Great. Carmen, tell me about the search for the Ark of the Covenant and what this archaeologist was doing. Was it a team of people or just one person?
I think he operated mostly solo, though he got different people involved with the ground-penetrating radar and all of that sort of thing. He started out at the Dome of the Rock, thinking it may be there, and then, of course, when you think about the Knights Templar and all mm-hmm. the ways along the Silk Road that things ended up being moved around, and then he started thinking that maybe Alexander had it, and his sarcophagus, to be rolled along to end up in any kind of tomb, would have to be 5 meters, or a road of 5 meters wide. And there is something in there. Like, I've seen these pictures and the videos of it. And so there's something that looks very much like the Ark of the Covenant has been described. Now, at this meeting of the principals, there were 10 people. All of us had to sign non-disclosure agreements. Mine has been lifted recently,
okay.
So I am able to tell you certain things. And, you know, the discussion was, well, is there one Ark of the Covenant, or is it like a technology that could have been replicated, like there's toaster technology, but there's many more than one? And what would the characteristic features be? And the discoverer was convinced that it would have to have a certain amount of gold content on it. And so there is this square rectangular device that stands up on pedestals and smaller feet, and there's something that looks like gold bars that go all the way around the outside.
That's what they described in the Bible.
And but get this, at the top there's melted ruby. Now ruby melts at 2500 degrees Celsius.
That's hot.
And gold melts at 1,000 degrees Celsius, if I'm correct. And so the technology defies what we know about the physics of melting different substances. And it's there, and he's convinced it's the Ark of the Covenant.
That's it.
Now, it does make sense. But when you think about what Alexander would have accumulated, you know, and when he's doing, he's taking his foot soldiers from one end of the world to the other.
Conquering everything.
Well, here's another interesting point, though. 42 years ago, in 1977, I ended up going on a camping trip from London to Kathmandu, and we went diagonally across Europe, and then Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, India, Nepal. Well, that's kind of the route that Alexander traced, and then he ended up in China. And I'm like 22 years old going, what do you mean I just followed the steps of Alexander? Why would I do that? And so I've been quite connected, you know, to this story for a good long time. And so the story is, when he went from one place to another, he did not kill everybody like some of, you know, Genghis Khan and a bunch of them did. He joined with the people, he integrated them, understood about their religious practices and whatnot. And the king of Persia, the emperor of China, they were also grateful, if you really think about it, that they gave treasures to Alexander. Well, when he's walking with his foot soldiers, leading them at the front on his horse with his sword, he's not going to keep all these treasures with him. So there seems to have been a relay that kept going back to this tomb and delivering these treasures. Okay?
It's remarkable.
However, pardon?
That's remarkable. But there's a caveat here, isn't there?
Well, not exactly. But the point is that you heard me talk on Beyond Belief about the turkey find.
Right.
And there's two specific things that are similar there. One is copper engravings, and both of them have these copper engravings. But the other thing is with the turkey find, we thought this, I call it the Nefertiti find, there were smaller gold statues, but I knew them to be wooden statues covered in gold leaf. And the discoverers there scraped away the back of the statue, and I told you this already, and scraped the gold away and got some of the wood and did a carbon-14 dating of it, and it turned out to be 11,600 years old. And we know that carbon-14 makes things look younger, typically, which means that these artifacts were not made in the artisan workshops at Amarna with Nefertiti and Akhenaten. They were inherited. From where? From when?
That's right. What kind of technology did they possess?
That's like your grandmother's china and silver goes down generation upon generation. So these treasures that are in the tomb, I say, are super valuable and super old and come from all over the world.
They are saying some that the Ark of the Covenant is in a church in Ethiopia.
Mm-hmm.
Some still think it's under the dome in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
This discovery could be just dramatic as all get up. When will they go public with this, Carmen?
Okay, first let's comment on the Ark of the Covenant. Why can't there be more than one? Why can't it be Ark of the Covenant technology?
There could be many. You're right.
It's my maybe not many, but some. And my conviction is that one of them was charged in the corbelled niche of the Queen's Chamber in the Great Pyramid, and that when they left Egypt with it, it was charged, and then it slowly lost its charge. So it's some kind of self-generating, energetic machine.
Well, because they do say that one who would look upon it or open it could get killed. So there was some kind of burst of energy that pops up at people if they open it up the wrong way.
Okay, but I don't have a problem at all with there being more than one.
Where would the Ten Commandments be? In one of them?
Well, that I don't have any information of exactly. But, I mean, there's other things that you'll be interested in there. And you asked something after that. I just got sidelined on the Ark of the Covenant.
Well, they thought it was in a church, the fact that it could... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Ethiopia, yeah. And I don't... The thing is, though, is it's unverifiable because the guardians in Ethiopia don't let anybody see it. And so, and that's all fair enough to keep a mystery going. But it also makes sense that Alexander, over his escapades, would have ended up with many valuable treasures, the Ark being one. But the Ark of the Covenant was the central thing that they were looking, that this discoverer was looking for. And in an attempt to find it, he found the rest of all this. And I'm not even done telling you what's in there. You know, like there's life, many, many life-size gold statues, life-size horses and other animals.
My God.
Chariots. But I'm not even, that's just the, okay, so there's a level of artifacts. There's a level of the sarcophagi, each with the artifacts of each person. And then there's another whole level.
What's there?
Well, okay, I'm going to cut to the chase.
Cut to the chase, Carmen. Dr. Bolter.
One third of the Library of Alexandria.
No, that's supposed to be missing and gone. That's amazing.
Okay, now, I have been, you know me, I've been going all over the world chasing after these mysteries. And what happened to the Library of Alexandria has been a burning question.
That's literally.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, and the transition between the matriarchal times and Hypatia, who got, you know, quartered, you know, because she was the teacher of the teachers as the patriarchs were taken over, and she was the head of the Library of Alexandria, and then it got destroyed. And I kept thinking, okay, wait a minute. If they're burning it at the front and the priestesses and the librarians are in there, why wouldn't somebody be at the back door taking some of it, to putting some of it somewhere, preserving some of it? Right now, when we talk about the, and I talked to you about this before, along the Silk Road, and, you know, somebody's got a treasure, and, you know, stick them up, give us the treasure, and then somebody else, stick them up, give us the treasure, and eventually they ended up hiding a lot of this stuff, and so there's all these treasure maps just off the Silk Road, and there's actually two Silk Roads divided up going along that whole thing, and so there's many, many, many sets of treasures. So I think that these things got found and moved and collected, and, you know, powerful people got them together, and now there's troves in a lot of different places. And, of course, governments step in. And with the turkey find, I was charging my cameras. I was on my way to do a full shoot of the whole thing. And they said, well, don't book your ticket till Monday. And on the weekend, they threw all the Americans out of Turkey and opened the border to the Syrians. And the whole thing was shut down. And
yeah, well, they all came flooding in.
That's right. And so, you know, with the Hawara find, you know, there's Louis de Bellefond, who built the canal there. You know, then Sir Flinders Petrie came along from 1881 to 1891, 10 years of digging in Egypt. And that book says, oh, don't go digging there. You're going to find water because it's leaking from the canal. And that basically kept everybody out. But the line of the canal follows the deep level. One of them has a ceiling of 20 meters deep, and the other one 40 meters deep. And that's deep. Six of the chambers have gold. And the water, I call them puddles, they're deep underneath it all. You know, so there's all kinds of discoveries that have not been opened. But when it comes time to opening things, it particularly, well, I say particularly in Egypt because that's, you know, the place I've been spent the most time in, 33 trips later. And living there for 2.5 years, they do not want to change the narrative.
No.
The story they have, Ramses cut off the hands of his enemies and it was warring. And no. Dynastic Egypt was already patriarchal Egypt. All the pre-dynastic things were the more spiritual. You've heard me talk about that at length.
Sure.
It's our 25th and 26th hour, you and I. Did you know that?
is this tomb in Jordan close to the point of Egypt where it almost touches Jordan way down at the south, or is it up closer to where Jerusalem might have been?
Well, no, it's not down there, and the Gulf of Aqaba is what you're talking about.
Right.
And I went along the coast and took a ferry, and looking along the other shore, which isn't that far, as Saudi Arabia, and then when you come, there's just a little point where Jordan touches the water. No, that's not where it is. Is it near Petra, where they've just had flooding and landslides and stuff? No. Now, looking at maps, no one's disclosed to me where in Jordan.
Ah, okay.
But going with people who know the Middle East really well, understanding that it's a salt mine, and looking at the lay of the land, it actually makes sense that it would be closer to the Dead Sea.
Well, and then, you know, just looking at the map and looking how Egypt is strategically located there, and at the time Israel was Palestine, it's conceivable that they would have taken the body of Cleopatra and put it in a tomb right where they are saying they may have discovered it. That's not that that would not be far-reaching at all. That would be pretty, reliable.
It really makes you think. And I've been thinking about this for a long time. Oh, I know what I was going to tell you. There are copper engravings in there. And I asked the discoverer if the scrolls from the Library of Alexandria were papyrus. I sat next to him in this big meeting. It was just so incredibly profound. And he said, no. I said, what are they made of? Leather.
Leather?
Yes, they were imprinted. Leather, what do you call it, embossing or whatever. And so they are not going to, you know, they're still going to have the records. And then there were all these copper plates. And they found those in the Turkey find, too. And then there was one more thing that I found really curious. You know when you see the Rosetta Stone?
Right.
There's Greek, there's hieroglyphic, and there's demotic. There are demotic plates where the letters are punched out. And the only way you can read them is by holding them up to the light or a candle. And there's a whole bunch of those in there. So there's a whole level of records.
When do they go public?
Well, as we say, it's a public secret. Reuters has already done two. Well, I don't know if the second one was published, but the first one was out. It went public. There is a website, but there's practically nothing on it, and the pictures are not very legible.
I mean, this is an international story, Carmen. It's huge.
Well, I know, and everybody had a gag order, and a few months ago, the president of the foundation that's organizing all of this said, go public. And I'm like, okay, and then what?
But they need to give you a little bit more info. I mean, you've done a remarkable job tonight telling us what you can, but, you know, they should have, like, an international news conference in front of the structure
with
the testing.
Well, and it'll come to that, but apparently the King of Jordan, and I say the Queen is involved as well. Well, not involved, but it's theirs. It's their baby.
It's their baby,
but they,
right,
politically, are very sensitive to tribes, as I understand from people I know who've lived in the Middle East who are Western people. The whole thing is a powder keg anyway.
That's true. Carmen, hold on. We're going to come back and take phone calls and continue chatting. Yeah, great information. Dr. Carmen Bolter with us. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.